And good morning, everyone, on the Money Matters Morning Edition. It's 3 minutes, 4 minutes past 8 o'clock this morning with the cloudy skies out. And we're delighted to have Brendan King with us this morning. And he is here, and he and I have been chatting. And one of the things that he hears all the time is the dreaded word probate. That's spelled P-R-O-B-A-T-E.
And I'm glad you didn't have me spell that, Dick.
Yeah, and they have to, and of course, and their judges who pick up that piece of paper and make decisions.
That's it,
and,
you know.
So the question then becomes, because you hear all the time, avoid probate, avoid probate.
Yeah.
A, is that a good thing to do?
Yeah.
And B, if it is, how the heck do you do it?
Well, you know, it is. If you can avoid it, you know, that's great. And the real question is, you know, how do you avoid it? All the time I hear at my office, and one of the reasons why I thought it would be a good topic to talk about is, oh, Brendan, you know, I'm not going to go to probate. I have a will. Well, a will is probate. Will is, you know, what happens to your probate assets? And I guess we should step back and say, well, what's a probate asset? But a probate asset is something you have in your name alone, and that there's no beneficiary listed on it. So if you have something, an asset in your name alone without a listed beneficiary, no one can get access to it. And you need that permission slip from the probate court.
Right.
Your executor or your administrator needs that permission slip to kind of deal with that asset. So, you know, if you do have an asset in your name alone, some people say, well, I can avoid that by adding a name. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago, why that can be a bad idea.
Yeah.
You add someone's name to an account, you're adding their liabilities to your account. You know, we talked about ways to avoid that. But a will is probate. And I think that's what I, you know, really want to get across to people. You, by virtue of having a will, doesn't mean that you're going to avoid probate. It means that you're choosing and directing where your probate assets are going to go.
And so, but what would be the way, or some of the ways, that people can, I guess, have a will, but put a stopgap before they get there?
Absolutely. Great question. And really what you end up doing, Dick, is you have different ways to do it. But of course, I'm a big fan of the trust, the living trust that you set up in addition to your will, that you would fund when you're alive. So for instance, if I have an asset in my name alone, like the Brendan J. King savings account, and you can be at any bank.
Yeah.
Now, if something happens to me, no one has any ability to have access to it. Okay, so, you know, if I had my wife's name on it, of course she would have access to it. But say, for instance, I didn't want to put anyone's name on it. What I would do, I would say, Brendan J. King trustee of the Brendan J. King Revocable Trust, because I had set up a trust, for instance.
Right.
Now, there will be someone listed as a successor beneficiary right behind me if I'm incapacitated or if I pass away.
Right.
That day, you know, they could walk in and without ever having to go to probate and deal with that asset.
Right.
So, you know, it's a more of a matter of, you know, how can I get permission to someone else without adding their liabilities to it? So it's about getting the same thing as the ease of just someone adding someone to your name without getting their liabilities on that account. So the trust is a great way to do it. Trust helps us with avoiding a living probate and a death probate, because a living probate would be, if I'm incapacitated, my successor trustee can take over. If I pass away, my successor trustee takes over. If I have an asset in my name alone, a power of attorney can avoid a living probate because they don't need to get a conservatorship over that account to get permission to deal with it. Or if I were to pass away with that name in my with that asset in my name alone, then that asset would have to go to probate, and that's where you'd have that.
Because
you know,
power attorney ends with at death.
That's right, and that's another great point, Dick.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, I got power of attorney.
Yeah,
wonderful.
How's
Mary doing? Oh, she died. Sorry.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's over, you know, and you shouldn't really try to use it. Yeah, and someone may say, well, how's the bank going to know? Well, you know, and that's the important thing. You shouldn't be using that power of attorney after that person dies, because the power extinguishes at death.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, a lot, I hear you fellas and throw around revocable trust and irrevocable trust.
Yeah.
Now, on the surface, a revocable trust means you can change it, and an irrevocable trust means it can never be changed, period.
Right.
Why don't you tell us the difference between a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust, and when, which instrument should be used when?
Now, that's great, because, you know, I was thinking the same thing in the back of my head.
Yeah,
that, you know,
the average guy listening,
they don't know.
Say those two words,
then,
well, wait a minute.
And they even sound alike. When you say revocable, some people say, well, is that irrevocable, did you say, or revocable?
That's right.
They should be totally different sounding names. But certainly a revocable trust is a trust, as you said, Dick, you can change, you can amend, revoke, take back to yourself. An irrevocable trust, as you pointed out, is something you set up and that you can't change it. It can't be changed. Doesn't mean that you won't have to, you don't have to give up absolute control over it, but you certainly can't change what the document says. Now, the biggest difference in the two is a similarity is if you fund it while you're alive, they will both help you avoid probate. Okay, so for avoiding probate, they're both going to accomplish that. The biggest difference is, and we'll use the nursing home scenario, is a lot of times I'll have clients who fund or put their house into a revocable trust, one they can change, and they said, oh, well, I'm all set for nursing home. My house is protected. I have it in a trust. Well, a revocable trust is not going to help you protect the asset from, you know, being lost to the cost of nursing home or for any kind of creditor protection, because you can really get that back yourself. If you can get it back, general rule of creditors, you know, creditor protection or asset protection, if you can get it back, they can get it.
Yeah.
Okay? It's because they stand in your, creditor stands in your shoes, and they'll just say, well, I'm going to take it back.
Yeah.
An irrevocable trust is a trust, you know, typically that you're not also a beneficiary of necessarily, that will protect the house. Now, if you are a beneficiary of an irrevocable trust, query, you know, why you set that up in the first place, because it's not going to really offer you much asset protection unless it's done in another state. There's a few states that allow you to do it. Massachusetts is not one. But certainly, you know, if you can, if you don't have access to it and you set it up and you put your house in there and say you wait that 5-year look back period, house would be protected. You know, assuming that there's no other problems with the trust.
Well, now, could one have theoretically a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust?
Oh, absolutely. And quite often they do.
Because they'll put the house in the irrevocable trust, and that's all that's in it.
That's right.
Just protects it.
That's right.
And then anything else liquid goes into the revocable.
Very common plan that we set up for our clients. Very common. And is that they'll have both because not everyone is going to put all of their assets into an irrevocable trust because they want access to it you know, while they're in the community and living a normal life. Their house they'll probably still live in, even if it's in the irrevocable trust.
Right.
So that won't change, and they won't really feel that being in there. But for everything else, they want to avoid probate, but they want to have access to it. And it may be subject to creditors or the cost of long-term care, but they really need to have access to it. Very few people in the world would ever put everything into a trust that don't have access to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like giving all your assets away.
Yes, right.
So you're right on the money, Dick. That's quite often what we do. We'll have an irrevocable trust and a revocable trust for clients. And that typically a lot of times the house or maybe even some other assets that they don't want to, you know, they don't feel
risk,
like they need, but they don't want to risk. Yeah, they'll put those into the irrevocable trust and everything else will go into the revocable trust.
Wow. That's intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, very.
And, well, here's the interesting thing. What the bottom line now comes down to is you don't want to try that all by yourself.
That's right.
You know, you want to make sure you have somebody who does this on a regular basis and has done many, many of them, a fellow like yourself. And the reason I say that is because I am sure one word could make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely right. And it does. It does. The slightest, you know, little word in a trust will either make it accessible or make it taxed differently.
Yeah.
These things are very, very delicate, and the language that you use and how you phrase it is very important. You know, I think we kid around all the time. You know, could I try and fix the brakes in my car?
Yeah.
I probably could try. Would I want to? And would I want my children in that car after I tried to fix it? No.
No.
Would I want to, you know, test
that's
those
right.
brakes? No.
No. And that's the other thing. The whole situation is, are there really differences between client A and B, or are they all basically the same?
Everyone's different. Everyone's different. Everyone has a certain nuance to their plan that may have been different from the client I saw before.
Yep.
Whether it's they have a special needs child, or you know their child is maybe getting a divorce, or has been going through a nasty divorce, or another child's in bankruptcy, or they're planning on getting a divorce, or they're planning on getting married someday, and we're talking about prenuptial agreements. So there's always something that is going on with some client that makes them different from the other. Their assets may be different. They may have assets in different states, different countries. Their assets may be subject to estate taxes, whereas another client's may not be. All these things kind of add a little extra ripple and wrinkle to their plan that you know I need to be cognizant of and incorporate that factor into their particular plan. Now, a client will oftentimes look at documents and say, "Oh, these look like they were just you know spit out of a machine."
Yeah.
No, we draft all of our documents. I've drafted them all myself personally, and they all have our language in them. Now, they may look similar on their face, but they have things that have been added and taken out that makes it what it is. Certainly, you know, we're beyond the days of sitting behind a typewriter, typing things out, and then stapling a blue back piece of paper to the back of these things. We're beyond those days. But so sometimes things look processed because we have computers that make it look that way.
That's
but certainly they are put together, you know, with every individual circumstance, you know, taken into account.
Right.
And you know that because when we sit down with a client, they don't like filling out the forms that we give them. We actually will have them fill out forms, or we'll do it with them. But one way or the other, we have to go through an intake sheet to ask them all the questions we need to ask them.
Yeah.
Have you been divorced before? What do you have any divorce obligations under your will? Sometimes people forget about that. They may forget the fact that when they were divorced maybe 15 years ago or 10 years ago, they have a mandatory life insurance obligation for minor children from a previous marriage. Now, if I don't take that into consideration, their new plan may be subject to having a type of a lien or estate lien put on it from the previous family.
Yeah.
So all these things need to be, you know, come into play and need to be thought about, because it's not the client's job to think about it. It is after I bring it up, but they're coming in saying the same thing they all do. I want a will.
Well, you know, the funny part is too that the average person who's lived any length of time, how do you remember every little thing
along
the way unless you're asked?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I did do that,
you
know, and, wait a minute, let me go check, you know.
Yeah.
You may not look up something, you may look up something that you had, you know, 20 years ago.
That's right.
And one of the things I always think about is insurance policies that were taken out 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Who's the beneficiary?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah, your mother or your ex-wife?
Do you remember? And it could be someone who's long since passed away.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't check those and review them, and look at them, you could end up somebody really mad at you.
That's right.
Even go to the funeral. You know.
And people who didn't like you before that maybe now like you because you left.
My new best friend. Yeah. No, but it's true. I mean, we chuckle about it, but the fact of the matter is, those are vital things, and without someone who does this on a regular basis with numerous clients and has gone to school and has studied for it and executes them on a regular basis, you could leave yourself very, very exposed and or vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely.
And so the good thing is you can really protect things and tie it down so there's no discussion.
I mean,
you know, the way things are worded can be interpreted differently by different people.
That's right.
Including judges.
Yeah.
You know, they can look at something and see it a lot differently than you see it.
Right. A lot of the things.
Wait a minute, that says it's for me. Well, no, it really doesn't.
Yeah. You got to be very clear, and sometimes we're painfully clear, or we reiterate what we're trying to say. And a lot of the things that are drafted in our documents are through experiences that either we've had or other lawyers have had that was looked at a different way. So then what we do, we go back into our documents or our templates and make sure that we clear that up. You know, not necessarily from our experience necessarily, but something we've seen someone else have. Because we in the profession are constantly talking with each other about our experiences. We share that with each other. So it's kind of one of those things, if, you know, why reinvent the wheel? If someone else had an issue with that, let's try to fix it before, you know, one of our clients do. So it's about staying on top of it. It's about, you know, specialization. You know, quite frankly, a lot of the work that I get are from other lawyers. You know, and a lot of the lawyers out there will recognize that this is a specialty, and if it comes into their office, they'll send it to me, and I'm happy to, you know, work with their clients on that.
Well, because that's important to hear. It's just like going to a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go to a doctor and he finds something or he suspects something, and he sends you to another physician who's an expert in that field.
Correct.
Not because he couldn't read a book and find out.
Right.
Because it's so much better for him to take you, if he's your primary care physician, and say, okay, look, you need a specialist for this. I'm sending you to Dr. such and such.
That's right.
And attorneys do the same thing because there are experts. I mean, we have Jimmy Earhart, who's a terrific bankruptcy lawyer. He doesn't know, you know, doing a revocable trust.
Right.
He not his job.
Right.
You know,
right.
not in his grade.
That's the way the world these days.
That's
you got to stay in your right. There's just too much to know. You know, the days of, the general practitioner on the third floor with a dog in the corner. You know, you can kind of come in and talk to him at will about whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's just not that way anymore. No. Things are much more complicated. You even go back and look at some of the older wills in probate that were done years ago. And they don't have a lot of meat to them.
I mean,
that's the way things were done.
That's right.
Too complicated these days. People know that. There's a lot that people know. People know a lot about what they should do, and they expect that you, as a professional,
I think one of the things we've talked about on many, many occasions is computers have really changed everything.
Yeah.
Now, some things they've done are very good.
Yeah.
There are other things that aren't very good.
Right.
Like Zoom Law or whatever it is. Uncle Bob Shapiro,
and
for $5 I'll send you a will.
Right.
You know, and can be absolutely treacherous
and
dangerous.
Right.
Because then suddenly you have a piece of paper that is just a general piece of paper that maybe not even carry water.
Yeah, well, it's almost akin to when you buy things without knowledge, it's almost akin to me going online and without any idea of what I'm looking for, buying those brake pads for my car, and I don't know the make, the model, or anything like that, and I'm just going to try to install it myself. Did I get the right kind? Is it the front brakes, the back brakes? I mean, I don't even know enough to make fun of it like I'm trying to. I mean, it's just so complicated.
I'll give you a classic example. It doesn't have to go far as brakes.
Yeah.
A windshield wiper.
Yeah. There you go.
Every single car has a different size and a different connection.
Yeah.
So you have to, if, like, I happen to have a Jeep Commander, so I had windshield wipers. We had to get 17 inch, and they're made for, and they tell you this will fit a Jeep Commander 07 to 08, but 09. I had a crack windshield. I'm going to tell you an incredible story. Crack windshield. Went to the windshield guy. He says, I have to have the model number of your car and the serial number. I said, why? Well, he said they had two different windshields in 07. The first so many cars had one kind of a windshield, and then they changed it as the car moved along.
Right.
They came up with a different one, and it's a slightly different windshield. But I have to order the right one. If I get the wrong one, it won't fit.
Perfect example,
And that's Jeep Commander, okay?
Right.
So we had to look it up. Ah, he said, okay, now I know, and you need type whatever it was.
Right.
And he got it. But who knew that the Jeep Commander in 07 had two different windshields?
Right.
The first 7 or 8 or 10,000 made had one style, and then they made an adjustment in it, and it was a difference. It fit a different way, or was different beading around, whatever it was.
Yeah.
There was a slight difference.
Yeah.
But you had to order the right one.
And the professional is the one who told you.
Who told me.
Again, you know, if you're a lay person looking into this, you would never have known that. I mean,
when I called him, I said, it's an 07 Jeep Commander. Do you know when it was made? I says, no. He said, well, it's on the inside of the door pan. He said, well, come on down.
Yeah.
He said, let me not have you try to find it.
Right.
I know right where it is. And I drove down, had me around the corner, and he opened it up, and he's, oh, okay. Ah, now I know. And
just like that.
And he ordered the right one. But he said, I happen to have the second one. But that's not the end of there.
Right.
The point was, a simple thing like that.
Right.
And if you don't know, and you said, I can put that windshield in myself.
Right.
You know, or I can put those windshield wipe, those blades in myself.
Right. Right.
If they're the wrong blade, they're going to flop and flap all over the place.
Yeah, you have to pay for professional help.
Yeah.
You do.
You do.
Otherwise, you're gonna spend time and energy and more money trying to do it on your own.
Yeah.
And probably make a mistake to boot. I mean, you may have somehow gotten that thing installed, but it would have leaked.
There are great stories, Brendan, about people who my father used to call them. Jack of all trades and a master of none.
That's right.
Who will attempt a refix. They're going to fix the light fixture that's out.
Right.
And they get it all apart. And then they don't know how to put it back together. And then they end up calling an electrician who comes in chuckling at $50 an hour and fixes it for you. Only problem is, you're really wrecked it on him, so he's got to put a whole new box in and a whole new Fody Bopa in there and a new Fitty Dupa, and instead of a 20-minute job for $40, it's now $150 because he had to do the whole thing over again because you ruined it when you took the screws out or something.
That's right. I would say about half the stuff on my desk right now is that. You know, either someone has tried to do something and it's gone too far, or I may be taking over a case that maybe wasn't handled exactly how I would have handled it. Not saying right or wrong, but just different. And it is. It's going to cost them more to mop it up.
Well, I told you, I was listening one day last week, and some person called, mm-hmm. and they had all the answers.
Yeah.
Only they were wrong.
Right.
And the attorney said, well, I have some bad news. You need to call me right away, because what you think you got, you don't have.
Right.
And I don't want to get into who did it, because I don't care and it's not important.
Right.
But I'm telling you, what you just told me, if that's true,
right,
you need to call my office now.
Right.
He said, because you got a huge problem on your hands.
Right.
What you think, and what he did, and I think I shared it with you,
yeah,
he somehow tied in his Social Security payment into the trust.
Okay, yeah.
And
that's right.
The problem was, every month it started the 5 years again.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Every time that check was deposited automatically,
it created another 5 year period.
Sure. So he says, how long you been doing this? And he said, 2 years. And he went, oh, I was hoping you'd say a month. He says, you got 5 years to go, pal.
Right.
And he said, you don't have 3 years to go.
Right.
And he says, so you better call me or somebody immediately and get that redone.
Right.
He said, I don't know where you got that idea, and I don't really, no names, please, I don't want to know.
Right.
But it's wrong.
Right.
And so it can happen.
It can.
And either with somebody who, as you say, doesn't understand that type of law, isn't versed on it, and has made a judgment based on limited knowledge, and or a do-it-yourselfer.
And that brings up an important part, because people may ask themselves, well, how do I know I'm in the right place? And I think the first thing you want to say is, well, you want to make sure that the person only does that. They're only doing, you know, planning.
Yeah.
Now, if someone is only doing planning, and what you may want to say is, well, how do I still know? Well, ask somebody. Ask for a referral. Ask for a couple referrals.
Yeah.
You know, and have people had good experiences in the past?
Right.
You know, where does your lawyer send people? Right. Where does your accountant send people? Where does your financial advisor send people?
Yeah.
You know, get a couple of names. Sit down with them. Doesn't cost anything to sit down with me. See if, you know, not only, it's very important not only to have a good legal fit, but also a good personality fit.
Well, not only that, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
There's got to be a major trust between two individuals or three individuals.
That's right.
You and a husband and wife. And because that's so important, that initial meeting at no cost is vital. I recently heard of a person who called up and was upset because he had called a financial advisor, and they went to the initial meeting. And about halfway through the meeting, the financial advisor advised him to find somebody else. And he said, the reason is, sir, you and I are not on the same page, and you're not listening to me.
Right.
And I'm afraid that down the road you and I are going to have conflicts, because, and he said the conversation was, he says, you know, he was telling, and I was telling him, and the person said, well, number one, what did you, if you were telling him, why did you go to him?
Right, you know? Exactly.
And Barry was, and he was saying, he said, but look, he says, I give that man credit, because the most important thing is confidence and trust in each other. And he felt that you and he were going to have a conflict of personalities.
Right.
Your personalities were two, either the same, and you were both at each other's throat, or, you know, they were so different that he couldn't work with you.
That's a very important point, and I think it goes, as you point out, goes both ways.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hiring clients as they're hiring me.
Yeah.
You know, if we can't have a relationship, if you're not on the same page, then it doesn't matter how much I know or don't know, because it can't get relayed.
Yeah. If they don't trust you, if he's challenging everything you tell him,
that's right.
And that's what was going on.
Yeah.
Well, I heard this. You know, if I said, well, I understand that, but let me try to help you here.
Yeah.
You know, and it got to a point in the conversation where and the interesting thing is, the person who was doing the radio show happened to know the other person.
Oh, is that right?
And then came back a few days later and said, you know, a lot of folks heard that conversation on the air. I did get a chance to speak to the other person, and he was very honest. And he said, look, he said, we got about halfway through that meeting, and it was obvious that he and I were not going to make it.
That's
we
right.
just weren't going to make it.
And it's just not worth it.
And he said, it's to the point where, you know, I don't want an unhappy client, because there was nothing I could do to make him happy.
Yeah.
And I recognized that. And I wasn't trying to be mean.
Right.
I was, and in fact, I gave him the name of three or four other people who I happen to know, who I know might better fit him.
Yeah.
You know, because of his personality and where he was coming from. He was he was angry about some things, and the anger was showing.
You've got to trust your professional, because at some point you've got to trust their skill set and their knowledge base to make that jump. You know, another example, and we keep making analogies, but, you know, if you're with a doctor, you can ask a lot of questions, but you're not the one that's going to be performing the surgery.
That's right.
So at some point, you do have to let go,
you
know, and if you don't have that trust, then you're never going to be able to let go, and it's not going to work. It's just not going to work.
Well, I had occasion, and some people thought I was callous, but I had occasion where a friend had talked to me, and some member of their family was rushed to the hospital, and they were having a surgery and so forth. He says, and I got to get right down there. And I looked at him, and I says, when did you go to medical school? He looked at me. I said, what are you going to do in the hospital but get in the way?
Right.
Why don't you wait till it's all over
and
he's back in his room and go visit him?
Right.
But for you to run to the hospital and drive some doctor and nurse nuts.
Right.
And, you know, and you think about it. I remember when my kids were early kids were born, I couldn't even get in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
You drop her off and say, see ya, and they'll call you and tell you when the baby was born.
Right, right.
And they did it for a reason.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. Stay out of the way.
Pacing up and down in their way.
Not helping anyone.
And now recently, of course, the new ones now, they bring you right in the room with them, and you're there through the whole process.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And there are times when husbands have passed out on them.
Oh yeah,
you know, in the middle of the thing.
Right.
And now they gotta bring in two more people to get you out of the room.
Yeah. How is that helpful?
How did that help the doctor and the nurse in the middle of a delivery?
Right.
But I mean, and they talk about it, because I used to sit on the hospital board, and a lot of the doctors are concerned about it, because it's a distraction to them, and they said, you know, you never know till that baby's born what's coming.
Right.
And you might have to do an emergency C-section if you can't get the baby out. If the baby's upside down, you got to turn, you know.
And it's serious business, yeah.
Yeah, and to me, I'm the doctor. I know I'm going to be fine. But that poor husband over there, he sees all of a sudden I grab a different tool, or I say to the nurse, get me a such and such, or call doctor such and such and have him ready. This poor guy now is in a panic.
That's right.
And he said, you know, and he said, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, it's you know, you have to have that relationship,
mm-hmm.
and be able to sit down with somebody, have great confidence and trust in them, and then put together a beautiful document that serves the needs and the purpose.
Yeah. Now you have to, and again, making that leap and having, now it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be best friends with this guy or this gal.
No.
You really don't. What you need to
quality relationship.
That's right. And sometimes it gets too friendly. You know, sometimes people almost think that, you know, let's do this or do that. Yeah. No, let's, you know, this is a professional relationship here. It's still, you know, you don't have to be best friends, but you should feel comfortable calling or sending an email and within a reasonable amount of time getting a response back, or having somebody respond. And you're not always getting voicemail or something like that. You should have your questions answered. They should be answered to your comfort level. And if you do have questions, don't feel afraid to ask a question on top of a question, but certainly don't go maybe behind the professional's back and say, hey, this is what he's saying or this is what she's saying. Do you think, you know, because, you know, your uncles, and we always talk about the uncles and the aunts, may have done something different.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a question or if you want to get a second opinion, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, get a real second opinion.
Yeah, get them to someone who knows what they're talking. No, and that can be a problem.
Yeah.
And I've seen things like that happen where we have a situation where they sit with you. You put together, or you give that first meeting, and you give them all this information, and they go back and ask Uncle Henry.
Yeah,
Uncle Henry. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
And now, right away, there's a problem.
Right. Right.
You know. Now there's a breach.
Yeah.
And heaven knows what that document will ultimately look like.
Yeah. And a lot of times people hear what they want to hear. For instance, if they find out that the truth of the matter is they should do X, and X is going to cost them some money, they'll almost inevitably go with Y, even if Uncle Henry tells them that Uncle Y is the way to go, because if Uncle Y is $100 cheaper, they'll go that way.
Yeah.
You know, less focus on the cost
necessarily.
You still should be somewhat cost sensitive, but think about what at the end of the day you're going to be saving, because anytime you're buying something, you're buying what potentially could be something that where you're going to save money at the end of the day, or your estate may save money, or it's going to be cost you 10 times as much in cleanup, as you had mentioned with the electrician and the decobbling the electrical socket. So, you know, think about all those things, not just present day costs, what it's going to save you in the future. How much is it going to save you in estate taxes? How much is your home worth and not being lost to the cost of long-term care. Things these days do cost some money, but like anything else does, you know, if I want to get my car truly fixed, then it's going to cost me a few bucks,
right.
You know, or I could just stick duct tape on it.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know?
Not a problem.
Not a problem.
Like
it'll last
those,
for a little while.
New Apples. All you got to do is put a piece of duct tape on there and
right.
the antenna works.
Right. Exactly.
You know, at $400 a copy.
Right.
You know.
Right. Exactly.
And now you got a piece of duct tape on there.
Yeah.
I remember when they came out and said, "Well, if you put a piece of duct tape on it," I was watching on television, and the poor guy who was reading the news started to laugh. You know, it just struck him funny.
Yeah.
And he says, "Yeah, you pay $400 and you put a piece of duct tape on it, and it'll work better." You know.
Yeah.
Give me a break. You know.
Right.
Brand new Apple. Go ahead, put a piece of duct tape on. I'll try to get the duct tape off, incidentally.
That's right.
We're going to take, well, before we do, how do folks get a hold of you? Let's get that done.
All right. Estate Preservation Law Offices, 71 Elm Street, Suite 102, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01609. Telephone number is 508-751-5010. Again, 508-751-5010. Email is bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. And we're on the World Wide Web at www.estatepreservationlaw.com. www.estatepreservationlaw.com.
And we'll be right back with Brendan King and continue our intriguing conversation about things that people need to understand and know about a revocable trust, irrevocable trust, avoiding probate, and wills. We'll be back in just a few seconds. This morning, a person reached out and another stepped up. Sue led the active older adults in an exciting exercise class at the YMCA in downtown Southbridge. Not only was this a terrific opportunity to meet old friends and make new acquaintances, those attending noticed they felt stronger and that their balance is improving. This happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, and right down the street. We are living the United Way in Southbridge, Sturbridge, and Charlton. We are realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. We are responding to our neighbors in need. We collectively impact the communities where we live and work. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. United Way of Southbridge, Sturbridge, and Charlton, making a difference in our backyard.
Bottles of wine, rare and fine, and inexpensive too. Cases of beer, strange or weird, classic, local, or new. Spirits galore from ceiling to floor, at prices you'd find at the outlets. We have 3 locations in Massachusetts. Stop by a Yankee Spirit.
Yankee Spirits, exit 3B off I-84, exit 9 off Mass Pike, Route 20 in Sturbridge.
The Spirit 970 Restaurant Guide welcomes you to Central Massachusetts South at the crossroads of New England. Are you looking for good food and good times? You'll find both at some of the best restaurants anywhere. Zorba's Pizzeria and Tavern, 132 Sturbridge Road, Route 20 in Charlton. They have a senior menu available Monday through Wednesday, including soup, salad, and entree, coffee, or tea. There's an all-you-can-eat Greek roasted chicken on Thursday with ziti and sauce, roasted potatoes or fries, and coleslaw. Zorba's Pizzeria and Tavern. Go relax on their outdoor garden fish patio.
Tired of having to leave work to go spend a small fortune at one of those high-end coffee shops? Well, Wise Coffee Services can make it so your business has fresh coffee available all the time. They will come by your office and deliver everything you need so your business can start having fresh gourmet coffee every day. Without the hassle of leaving the office or draining your wallet, contact Wise Coffee Services at 1-800-52-TASTE. That's 800-52-TASTE. That's Wise Coffee Services, the wise choice when it comes to great coffee.
APS Automotive, family-owned and operated since 1972, offers the most competitive rates for service and quality pre-owned vehicles far below any competitor. Whether your needs are the first car, the second family car, or an upgrade to a high-end, reliable car, Steve Alcone and his staff will provide you the attention and effort you deserve. APS Automotive, located on Route 12 in Auburn, can meet the challenges of slow and poor credit with program cars and buy here, pay here programs. Call or stop by APS Automotive, 823 Southbridge Street, Auburn. That's Route 12. Call 508-832-2866 or click APSauto.net.
Howlett Lumber, with 2 great locations in Charlton and Holland, is your one-stop home center. With Benjamin Moore Custom Color Matching, they will match any color to help brighten your world. Benjamin Moore paint is reformulated to resist fading and withstand everything from New England's blazing sun to its most frigid days. Your home will always look great with the fresh new look of Benjamin Moore paint. It's easier than you think with a little help from your friends at Howlett Lumber. Howlett Lumber, Route 20 in Charlton, East Springfield Road, Holland. Howlett Lumber, remember the name.
Floods Auto Sales, 93 Hamilton Street in Southbridge. Here's just a few great reasons to go. Stability. They've been in the same location since 1919, and it's family-owned and operated with a full staff of caring ASE-certified auto repair experts. A full-service brake and front-end shop. Used cars with double the state warranty. On-hand complete exhaust specialists. A1 car rentals. That's just some of the reasons that for over 90 years, local folks have relied on Floods. And here's another. Floods prices are competitive, but their service is beyond compare. Ready, set, go to Floods today.
Money Matters Morning Edition, weekdays 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join me, Joe Mangiacotti, and co-host Kathy Menard the first Thursday of every month from 7 to 8 a.m. Compatible K9, 774-241-0440. 774-241-0440. Let's clarify, let's explain to people what you mean by human grade and why you don't use anything but human grade.
In a human grade dog food, it means that at the time of manufacture, all ingredients were fit for human consumption, that they were not rejected for human consumption because something was wrong with them. When you're dealing with foods that are not human grade, they are either parts of the anatomy or whatever that humans don't eat to start with, or they are things that were rejected for human consumption because something was wrong with it and it would make you sick. That's certainly not the sort of stuff that I'd want to feed my dog.
Right, absolutely. Money Matters Morning Edition, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on the Money Matters Radio Network affiliate, WESO AM 970.
Craving comfort foods like homemade meatloaf, Canadian meat pie, soups, and chowder? Then come to Fidel's Coffee Shop and Restaurant, 13 Central Street, Southbridge. Open 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy breakfast all day, every day. Fidel's is now open for dinner, Thursdays and Fridays from 4 to 8 p.m. On Thursdays, choose any two dinners from the specialty menu for just $11.99. Get hooked on fresh fish every Friday. Fidel's, where friends go to meet their friends.
The Oliver Wright Tavern, located just outside of Old Sturbridge Village, Route 20 in Sturbridge, presents the ambiance and community spirit of a licensed house that provided early New Englanders with great Yankee dining. Come for lunch Thursday through Saturday from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Don't forget their incredible Sunday brunch, served from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
I'm Brad, the executive chef at the Oliver Wright Tavern. I'm sure you'll enjoy everything we feature for our lunches and our Sunday brunch.
So make plans now to go to the Oliver Wright Tavern.
And we're back on Money Matters Morning Edition this morning. And we're with attorney Brendan King. And Brendan, we've had a spirited conversation. One of the things that always comes up is, how much is it going to cost?
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, you know, it's like going to the doctor, yeah, and saying, how much do you charge per stitch? I got a,
right,
bad cut.
Right.
You know,
right,
but before,
right,
you sew it up, doctor, is it $10 a stitch or is it $20,
right,
bucks a stitch?
Right, right.
You don't do it. What,
right,
you want to do is that you want to get healed.
Yeah, that's right.
As fast as you can. And you work out the price later.
That's right.
And the interesting thing is, we've had some calls both here at the station and on the network about people will call up and say, well, how much does it cost? And maybe we take a second and you can explain that it depends on the amount of actual work that has to be done.
Right.
Some things,
right,
are real simple,
yeah,
and they can be done relatively inexpensively.
Yeah.
Other things can be very complex. It involves 4 or 5 kids. It involves, you know,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Why don't you take a minute,
yeah,
and we'll chat about that so folks can understand that the most important part isn't going to cost you anything. That's to sit down with you and discuss what you need accomplished.
That's right, Dave. I mean, it's a great point because, you know, what I always tell clients is it's going to cost you a little time.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you can spend some time, I'm certainly willing to cost, you know, to spend time. It's time of a first meeting, an initial consult, because,
right,
at that initial consult, we'll go through that intake sheet we talked about. And people say, well, how much does a will cost? Well, you know, a will cost, I can give you what that would be, but,
yeah,
is that appropriate? It's kind of saying, you know, I'd like to make,
yeah,
analogies with everything. You know, how much to go back to the brakes? How much are my brakes costing? Well, is it the brakes that are making your car squeal? I've got to look under the hood.
Yeah.
You know, I got to see what the problem is before I can quote you a price. My car's,
yeah,
making a noise. How much is it going to cost to,
yeah,
fix it?
Yeah.
I got to look under the hood.
I don't know what the noise is. Yeah.
What's the noise?
Yeah.
So, you know, I always have people come in. No cost to coming in for as many times as we need to, quite frankly.
Yeah.
If a client still, you know, can't make a full meeting or, you know,
yeah,
you know, has more questions later, But at the end of that meeting, I will be able to quote them a price. And then no matter what happens after that, they may say, well, can I finance? There's always a way to work out financing. We always do. What we are big believers in our firm is, listen, don't buy something because it's on sale if you don't need it.
That's right.
Okay? Buy something that you need and you should have, even if we have to work out how you pay for it. I'd prefer to give someone what it is that they need and then, you know, figure out payments later. To your point, Dick, you know, someone wheels into a hospital, hey, you know, their insurance doesn't cover this, but they're going to die if they don't have
that's
it.
That's right.
Well, you give it to them.
That's
and we
right.
figure out a way to pay
about,
for a life.
You worry about that later, you know.
Figure out the payment later.
That's
because,
right.
quite frankly, I don't want to be – it's and it's a bit self-serving. I know it doesn't sound that way, but it's a bit self-serving too because I don't want someone else coming along the line later and saying, gee, Brent, this person needed this. Why did you give them this? And then me embarrassingly saying, well – that's all they could afford.
Yeah.
Or that's all they were willing to pay.
That's right.
Now, after I go through everything and they choose not to do what I'm suggesting because of cost and they don't want to pay it irrespective of anything I'm offering them, then that's a different story. And I will note the file and I'll even say that in a letter to the client just to make sure that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
But certainly there's a way to pay for it. I've never had a client not be able to pay for something that they wanted. They
That's
may
right.
choose not to do it, but I've never, you know,
right.
we certainly have offered good terms of payment to get that done.
Yeah.
We'll certainly ask for something up front just for a commitment to
bind
the deal.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that, you know, the car situation with you got to have something on the table just to make sure that, you know, consideration
I mean,
to bind it.
Yeah, I signed a piece of paper, walk away, and,
right.
and he's got nothing.
Right, and,
you know,
and
but,
I do the work.
But
and
say, hey, I changed my mind.
Exactly, and that's what we're always
the paper up, pal.
Because clients do. They do change their mind. And I've had that happen a few occasions where I've tried to, you know, be good about it and do the work ahead of time for the client. And they were in a bind and lost out. But that's just cost of doing business and learning my lessons a few times. But we do have to put something down just to keep the client interested or, you know, their foots in it as well. But never had an issue. Most of the clients that will come in after the meeting, once they're educated about it, they appreciate, by the way, at that point, once we've had the meeting, why things cost what they do.
Yeah.
They appreciate and have an appreciation for some of the other things that they haven't thought about.
Yeah.
Most of the cases that once a client has come in, very few people will end up walking away, not doing anything.
Right.
They may take their time and come back to me. I had a client who on Friday... new client that we closed that I met back last year. You know, we've been meeting and
they thought about it.
Thought about it. Got back to me
it,
almost three quarters of a year later and said, you know, Brian, let's go ahead. That made a lot of sense. I just had got busy.
Yeah.
So we do, and then we do follow up with clients.
Interesting you talk about the car deal, and I have great experience. I used to be a consultant to car dealers for their salespeople. And one of the interesting things, and the reason that they'll do it, and there is a good reason, and I accept it. I certainly wrote him a check to hold the deal because it protects me, too.
Right.
I mean, I just ground out a deal with the guy, and I really ground him.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
And I don't put up any dough, and I walk away. And somebody else comes in, and he can sell that car for $2,000 more. Guess what? Oh, by the way, Dick, I sold your car.
It's a very good point.
It works both ways.
It does work
both
secondly,
ways. But secondly, the other thought is that there are those individuals, and this dealer, I walk in off the street and I look at this car and I'm going to make a deal with him. He doesn't know where I just came from.
Right.
He doesn't realize I just came from home.
Right.
I could have come from this Mercedes guy down the corner.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm sitting with him.
Right.
And I grind him and I know, oh boy, I can do it here for this much.
Right.
I'll be back.
Right.
You know, and I
right.
run down to the other guy and say, beat it.
Right.
And he does. My second guy, who set the deal in motion for me,
right,
now has no sale.
That's right. That's right.
So it protects you.
It really
you know?
Does.
And so it's no problem. You know, like you said, it there's a protection mechanism so that it's going to come to fruition. Because
that's right.
what you don't want to have people doing is lawyer hopping.
Right.
You know, hey,
right.
I went to Brendan.
Yeah.
He'll do it for $2. How much will you charge?
Right. Right.
You know.
And you know, sometimes I will try to accommodate clients who have been to other lawyers who, if I know the lawyer, you know, is you know, certainly has the skill set, a similar skill set to myself, and it looks for the similar things. But otherwise, it's comparing apples to oranges.
Yeah.
If the guy down the street is you know, a divorce lawyer. And he's quoting this, I know we're not talking about the same thing.
That's right.
You know, so it's like, you know, in car terms, you know, the Yugo and the Mercedes.
Oh, hello.
You know,
yeah.
And so, you know, as far as, you know, what things you're talking about, but you know, it really is one of those things where It can be worked out. Clients shouldn't fear cost of it.
Matter is, there is a charge for service.
There is, yeah.
That's that simple.
That's right.
And in many cases, these things have to be filed. They have to be notarized.
That's right.
And they're an official permanent document.
That's right. That's right. It's a big deal.
That's right.
And it's they will be used.
Just another piece of paper.
Yeah.
You know, that you wrote on the back of a shopping bag.
That's right. That's right.
It's a legal document that binds. And so, you know, there's a value, I mean, a big value to it.
Yeah.
And so that it's very, very important. But I think that it goes back to the relationship.
Right.
In that session that's absolutely free, the client has an opportunity to know all the facts.
That's right.
Upon which he makes or she makes a final decision.
Right.
And then based on that decision, you proceed further. And whatever that avenue that takes, like you say, what you want to do, because there is a professionalism that goes to it, you don't want to have somebody walk away because, you know, it was $10 difference.
Right.
And it could have been solved by saying, I'll tell you what, how about if we work it this way?
Right.
Because there's a way for everybody to work things out.
Absolutely.
It can be done.
It can be done. It can be done. And we've never had, like I said, we've never had a situation where someone couldn't do it. They may have chosen not to do it, but not couldn't do it. And you know, getting that initial meeting and really having an appreciation for what you're buying, because maybe unlike some things like cars, someone may be very intelligent about cars and knows why you're spending the money on a Mercedes versus what you would do on a car that's not worth as much.
That's right.
There's a reason why you're paying more. So when you come in and you say, well, why am I paying this much for this trust? Well, come on in. We're going to explain to you what this trust is going to do.
That's right.
And everything that you pay for, you should have an appreciation for what you're buying. So at that meeting, you're going to develop why you're spending more than if you just bought a will.
Yeah.
You know, what is the trust giving you that a will doesn't give you?
That's right.
So why am I spending it? And then once clients are educated about that, they're much more willing and have a greater appreciation for spending that kind of money, whether it's all at once or over a period of time or finance or anything. So it's the education process. We both get to meet each other. It's a comfort level.
That's right.
And the client's also buying the professional too.
That's right.
Because
they're buying knowledge.
They're buying knowledge. And they're buying the relationship, and they're buying someone. Is that person going to be there for me when it hits the fan? You know, all these types of things. So you're buying a lot, and it's very important for the client to come on in, meet the person face to face. Now, have I, you know, had relationships with just over the phone? Sure, I've had clients overseas and that have hired me to do things that I have never met in person, but we have a phone relationship or an email relationship. But some sort of relationship should be established because you are buying that professional.
Yeah, and it's very, very important, and it's a document that as life goes on is going to really protect you.
That's right.
And tie things together for you so that there is no vulnerability or exposure.
Yeah.
And that's the important. I mean, I heard someone on the Money Matters the other day say, you know, the interesting thing is, and he says, I don't want to use a cliche, but can you afford not to? He said, but I'd rather than say it that way, here's what I would like to say. You spend the money today, and that expense could ultimately save you thousands down the road, or anguish and tears, and if I only hads, won't matter.
Right.
He said, you will look back at this and say, it was the best amount of money I ever spent.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you, I can tell you stories. I can tell you stories that you wouldn't believe. And I'm sitting there, and I can't help them. It's too little, too late.
Right.
And there's nothing I can do to protect it. And I've seen thousands of dollars go right to a nursing home.
Yeah.
Bingo.
It's funny because I'll get, and I think I may have mentioned
only
this.
Only come earlier.
That's right.
He said, and I see, and he says, I'm not kidding you. I'm talking, it can be $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
He said, I've seen beautiful financial plans and estates dwindle in 3.5 years like you couldn't believe.
Sure. Cost of a nursing home, $12,000 a month.
That's
I mean, that stuff adds up.
That's right.
You know, you got a plan for that stuff.
And they take it.
And I tell you, you know, it's funny, you know, you bring that up. I what clients will say to me, and I always find this amazing, I think I mentioned this on another show, is that I'll have clients say to me, whether they've done a plan with me or not, that when they're in a situation and they're in the ER, for instance, and they're having troubles or maybe some heart pains or chest pains, I'll have clients say to me on both sides of the fence, Brendan, you're the first person I thought of because I either had done it, some of them have done it and they felt good about it, or they hadn't, and then they immediately call me to get it done you know, once they get through the situation.
Yeah.
But what I always find interesting is that, not that, you know, I like to be thought of in those situations, but I certainly appreciate what they're saying is that when you're in that situation, you just want to have that tied up.
That's
and you
right.
either feel really good that it's done or not so good
That's
that
right.
it's not done.
That's
and
right.
there's not much you can do about it when you're in that situation.
No.
All you can do, I suppose, is hope that you get through.
Hope you wake up tomorrow.
That's right. And get
so
through.
You can get back to see Brenda.
Clients will say to me sometimes, "Hey, Brenda, do I have time to do this?" I'm like, "Sure, just don't die on me."
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
know?
And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, I can't
I mean,
do
you
it
talk
when
about the fella that you met with over a year ago,
yeah.
and he finally came home to roost.
Yeah.
Man, did he roll the dice.
Yeah, he did.
Rolled the dice for 11 months or 12
that's
months.
That's right.
Until he finally made that decision. Yeah.
Young kids, too.
Yeah, I was busy. I was too busy.
That's right.
Let me tell you a secret. You're never too busy to take care of yourself.
That's right.
Period.
And you got to do it, and then once you do it, you can kind of focus on other things.
My dad used to say to me growing up, and he was a commander, old tough bird, a commander in the Navy, and he'd say to me, "Son, there may be 10 reasons why you didn't do something, but don't ever give me one excuse."
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, being too busy is not a reason.
Right, right.
That's an excuse.
Right.
And so I learned that. And if he asked me to do something, man, I better do it. Or I better have one good reason why I couldn't do it.
Right.
You know, like the hedge trimmers didn't work.
Yeah.
That's a reason.
But I
was busy playing ball. That's an excuse.
And you know what I always end up telling people is that some of the busiest people are some of the best people that I have, because like the saying goes, you know, you want something done, give it to a busy person. If you can't get it done, you're not busy enough.
That's right.
That's what I always say.
That's right. Well, you know, the interesting thing is you say that all the time, and I have situations all the time where people will ask me to be on a committee or do something.
Sure.
And I really don't want to do another thing. Yeah. But I don't say no.
And it's I know the problem.
Yeah, and it's just one more thing.
Yeah.
Because my dad told me when I was a kid, "Son, if somebody asks you to do something, it is because they saw in you something that they didn't see in others. Yeah. And they've asked you to help them out because they need you to do it. Don't say no to them."
Right.
If there's a possible way you can help them, do it for them.
Yeah.
Because they've singled you out as somebody who's unique.
Right. Right, and I think once you start saying no, people start qualifying you. In other words, well, he does these things and doesn't. Maybe we just shouldn't ask him. Right,
yeah,
and that's how opportunities are missed.
That's right. Oh, don't ask him. He won't do it. He's
too
busy.
That's
he hasn't got time for that.
Yeah.
And it does. And it'll happen. We sit on committees,
yeah.
and someone's name will come up, and three people will say, "Oh, don't bother." He says no. He won't do it.
Right.
And then now 11 people just heard that Joe's not a good guy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And people don't think of that and realize that.
Right.
So once again, we're getting down to the end. But why don't we tell them how folks can get a hold of you? Because I think it's so important for a phone call or to reach out to you, because you can help them, you can guide them, and you can protect them. And even if they've got a document that hasn't been touched for 10 or 15 years,
that's right.
Let them bring it into you and have you go over it and say, "Well, hey, wait a minute, this is great, except, you know, this is also 2010, so there's three new laws,
right?
And we got to change this line and that line and this line because they don't exist anymore."
Get that legal checkup,
you
know?
Yeah.
You get your doctor's
checkup.
Because
there's people out there who've had it done, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago by an attorney who no longer practices, has retired.
Right.
And you've got a document that's vulnerable because laws have changed dramatically.
That's right. Well, listen, I'm at Estate Preservation Law Offices, and we're at 71 Elm Street in Worcester. 01609. Telephone number is 508-751-5010. Again, 508-751-5010. My email is bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. bking@estatepreservationlaw.com. And if you want to check out our website, we're at www.estatepreservationlaw.com. www.estatepreservationlaw.com.
Terrific. Well, Brendan, thanks very much for coming in. It was another spirited and good discussion this morning. And I hope folks who are listening will take the opportunity to review their own paperwork. And if you look at it and you don't understand it, or you have questions about it, or it's dated 1976 or 1982, you might want to give Brendan a call and set up a meeting. And if nothing else, just say, "Hey, Brendan, can you look this over and see what I need to do to bring it up to 2010?
Right. Happy to do it for him.
Yeah, and it'll be terrific. And so it's always great to have you on, Brendan. And once again, thanks a million and great to see you.
Thanks, Dick. Good to see you, too. It looks like it's clearing up out
there. Yeah, we got the sun out.
So
it's another fun day in good old New England.
That's right.
Take it easy.
See you later.